All right, guys, welcome back to the Swan Song Recap here, going into part number two. Adam.
Welcome back, everybody. We're just talking about kind of getting re-familiarized with the cast, and we have come to dear Stephen Lumpkin, who holds the honor of playing the most characters in this game. How does that feel, Stephen, as an accolade?
Some also call me the best. I feel like I've played a very interesting array of characters, which is really fun. And like, it's really neat to see people be like, oh man, like I remember all this stuff about Viktor Kovacs, like the fucking fully semi-automatic sniper pistol. I forgot that it was a sniper pistol, but yes.
There was a battle with some Irish sounding bounty hunters,
yep,
in which you attempted to fire a pistol much over recommended range.
Yeah, from way too far away. And then like We Are So Fucked is on the official Swan Song shirt, which is awesome.
So let's talk about that for a second, because yeah, that was like, can you recognize a point at which that became his catchphrase, or do you just, because I remember there were times where you were just saying it, and there were times where you were doing the whole "I'm looking at the camera and I'm saying my catchphrase" audience.
Yeah, I mean, like I don't know that I remember a specific time where I was like, "Oh, this is the catchphrase." I think there was a drinking game.
I think it was honestly when we got raided by the pirate crew. You kept saying. No, I think, like, that was the
there. Point there was a time when I like had to say it like five times in a row. I was like, "We are so fucked. We are so fucked." But like, there was a drinking game for the Swan Song, and it was like, anytime anybody on the crew says Swan Song, anytime Viktor Kovacs says "We are so fucked," and I was like, "All right, well, I'm sorry, chat. You're all gonna die tonight."
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Victor was your first character. What episode? Yep. Victor died, like, I think earlier on,
so like
than
nine
we remember.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah, like pretty early on. It was after the crash. Yeah, so it was episode 9 or 10 in that area.
Yeah.
And I remember Victor as being sort of the most, like, we're playing a role playing game and you just died, kind of like that, like exit, right? Because I distinctly remember being like, how many hit points do you have? And you're like, I got one. I was like, there are gunmen at the top of the stairs. All right. So, you know, that's where the whole stairs thing came from. And you know, Victor. Now, what I think, though, is interesting is Victor, for me as a GM, Victor's real contribution to the universe at large is Ancient Shandalian.
Yep. That was pretty cool.
Because
I was like, oh, I'm going to choose this random language. And then Adam was like, okay, well, that's the entire arc of the entire show.
so the Shandalians, because it kind of became a joke, because after you left, someone was like, oh, someone will finally, you know, speak Shandalian. So I was like, well, I need an ancient race, and we had talked about how Ancient Shandalian was different from modern Shandalian, and so that just became a thing. And that's an arc, that's a thing that you'll see run through the show a lot. So if you're, you know, if you're just tuning in for episode 41 and you're getting in this, a lot of the stuff in the show comes either from offhanded comments or characterizations by the players. You know, Fotenhauer exists the way they did because Mr. Sicarian, like all of the officers of Fotenhauer are Mr. something because Mr. Sicarian was. I took a thing that I thought was cool and ran with it as a larger thing in the universe. The Ancient Shandalian thing, a lot of the way that psychics work, and a lot of the culture of Majid.
Hang on. Let me also give credit where credit's due. Adam did this really fucking cool thing, which I think up until at least this show, I have not seen any other DM do. I'm not saying you invented it, but it's just something I've seen for the first time. You incorporated the community. Like, a lot of people were sending in.
Yeah.
Blue Fever came from a guy who just did a news report about that drug. A lot of the characterization of the organizations and people, that was stuff that Adam asked the community to do, and then people did a fantastic fucking job. Like, special shout out to the guy that did those news reports for a while, Lion something or another.
Yeah.
Incredible quality. Awesome. It actually captured a lot of spirit. The opening of the show is from a fan-made video. Yeah. Like, just so much of the stuff was facilitated by Adam being awesome and wanting to share the stage, but also people being awesome. So, yeah, it's offhand comments, which is really cool, but a lot of it, too, is you guys, and that's amazing.
And I think that goes to, for me, the way that I think about this show probably the most, but Mirror Shades to a lesser extent, though Mirror Shades is built in a universe that kind of exists before we came into it, is that the audience is an impact on play. They're functionally like helping us hack the game as we're playing it and allowing them to input stuff. You know, like you said, Blue Fever, Cabral, pretty much everything about Cabral, like being French and their government, that all comes from it. Because there are a lot of people that watch the show and they have a lot of knowledge about sci-fi or the world that I don't have, and so it's really nice for me to be able to kind of tap into that GM hive mind for that stuff, and to kind of give back, to be like, yeah, you made some cool characters, or you made a cool description of something. I'm going to reincorporate that into the show. But there are things now that we just sort of take for granted, like everyone from ASA is kind of like a weird, like post-apocalyptic, like Texan, and they kind of like worship the Dukes of Hazzard. Like, all of that just came from JP doing the accent. And I was like, well, okay, cool. Just do that thing. And I mean, that's, you know, awesome. you see this happen in
you knew a good Southern Belle, Adam. That was fun.
It's true.
That whole arc was very, very entertaining. So it just,
I was like, Adam's too good at this character. I can kind
of see him.
I can kind of see him in heels, little
my
dudes
stars and goddess
walking around the house. I was like,
well, the funny thing about that particular character. So there's an arc in which the characters are employed by an Aeson noble to go after her crabby husband.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she, I really played up some of the sort of surrealist, like Fifth Element, Hunger Games-y kind of like. You know, she had like a big blue Farrah Fawcett haircut, and everyone wore denim outfits, and she had a blue chicken as her pet. And
yes,
you know, that whole thing. I had just come off watching, I think, season 3 of House of Cards. So what I was really doing was like, that character in my mind was Kevin Spacey in drag, basically. So when I, you know, when I was channeling that character, I was like, all right, what did Kevin Spacey's Southern accent kind of sound like? And I just sort of did that. Yeah, Lady McCrary. So these things, these universe building things,
I can't unhear that now. I just, that's exactly what I hear. That's
yeah, great. Just they came from as much the community as they did from the folks at the table, and it really helps me GM more easily, because there's a lot of universe. And we were talking about this, and it's come up on Reddit a few times, where we could create spin-offs of Swan Song that focus on specific parts of the universe we've just barely touched as we've kind of moved through it. And I think, again, that's a sign of our work creating this content, but also the community for caring enough about it to buy in.
This is where we announce that we're never playing these characters again. We're starting a brand new show.
Swan Heresy.
Yeah, Swan Heresy.
So, Steven, to go back to you. So Victor felt to me like, at least initially, you're sort of, you know, toe in the water. Like JP was saying before, we hadn't all played together. You know, you played it. He felt kind of just like Science Officer Kovacs.
Yeah,
initially.
Pretty much. Well, like, the thing about him was that, and I think fairly quickly he developed this character trait, where when things are fine, he's pretty calm and cool, but when things go out of control, he just kind of loses it. Mm-hmm. So because he was kind of straight-laced, like, he was the face of legitimacy for the Swan Song. So that's where We Are So Fucked came from, because, like, as soon as shit went down the drain, he was like, oh, shit,
I was getting a bit of a, like, Burke from Aliens vibe, where you're, like, kind of the corporate man. Yeah,
I don't know why, but who's, is it Ian, is his name Ian Goldberg from Independence Day, what's his name?
Ian Malcolm?
Malcolm.
Yeah, Ian Malcolm.
But for whatever reason, I pictured him as a, like, buff, slightly younger version of him, because, like...
shirt open too much.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, but from the 80s or early 90s. Like, gold chain, maybe. A little bit of chest hair. A little bit of belly hair.
No,
but,
like it.
We all had, like, plus ones, and then fucking the nerd of the team has, like, plus 3, plus 5. He's, like, he's actually super buff. Like, you guys need help lifting that? By the way, like, Shandalian could come in. And we're like, shut the fuck up, nerd. Like...
Yeah,
the Jeff Goldblum could have lifted this with one arm, like lift.
Jeff Goldblum, thank you. Yeah.
Victor Kovacs was too good to live. Was the issue?
Yeah,
here.
Pretty much. But also, like, Victor Kovacs
was handsome too. It's like,
he did some really cool shit though. Like the when we got lost in space, like that was probably my favorite Victor Kovacs moment. Was we got lost in space, and then it was like down to Victor Kovacs putting everybody into cryosleep with like a crazy medical role.
That was
in
awesome.
Order. So that we had enough life support to crash land somewhere.
Yeah.
And then like that was kind of the spiral downwards for Victor, because like then we crash landed.
It wasn't a very long spiral. You died in the next episode.
Yeah, but like we crash landed, we woke up, and then he like got beat the shit out of him when he was like in his like prison cell. He got thrown into like the morgue with someone who'd been cut open, and he was like, whatever, I don't give a fuck. And then he just got killed. So that was like a really cool like, okay, this is the pinnacle. Victor is like saving the crew's life with medical stuff, and then just like down into a spiral of disaster.
Well, what I thought was interesting about that arc was that it was for you, like the escape of the crew from that planet was aided by the government that would provide your next character, right? That would provide Prosper. And when we talked about, both you and I and the group at large, we talked about the introduction of Prosper. So Prosper Trudeau was Steven's next character. The introduction of Prosper, we knew it was going to be tense from the beginning. Right, yeah. Because you were that character was an outsider injected into the crew with basically a sub goal that wasn't just be the like space pirate. Yep. You had an ulterior motive, yeah.
Yep.
And so I think that again, like people ask, like, how different would the show be had you not discovered Pi? And the whole arc with Pi, and we'll talk about Pi specifically, but I think that kind of pushed you into this next role as Prosper, and I thought that was a really interesting kind of arc, the way that character played out.
Yeah.
So I want to know primarily, though, I want to know about Eric. Let's talk a little bit about Eric. So you know you'd had two characters. What were you thinking when you came into building Eric? Like, what was your plan? How did you want to influence the story? Like, what was that about?
I think I really liked meeting the space Vikings. I thought they were cool. And then I was like, you know, like, what if you were like an outcast from the space Viking society? What would that look like? And that's kind of where I went with it. And I was like, oh, I I've played a specialist. I've played a warrior. The only class left for me is a psychic, so let's go with it. And then like, I rolled Eric's stats, and I rolled a 12 for strength, a 14 for dex, 14 for constitution, 14 for wisdom, 14 for intelligence, 17 for wisdom, and then a 4 for charisma.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like. I was like, well, what do I do with this? Because one of the coolest things about Stars Without Number for me is that the stats don't matter all that much. Like, a 4 is still just a -1. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah, not that bad. Yeah.
But it's still a 4. So, like, how do I make this space Viking who's got a 4? Like, why is that? And then, it's like, okay, well, he left. What's the space? Sigrid? He left Sigrid because he didn't fit in anywhere. And then he went to Hoveda and he studied a lot. But because he's just like a bumbling kind of guy who puts his foot in his mouth all the time. That was like the big thing that I chose about Eric early on, was he puts his foot in his mouth constantly. That's his thing. Which actually, so like every one of my characters is a little bit of me.
And me, apparently, because that's what I do.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people to that point, I think a lot of people that watch the show have said something to that effect, either of being like, you know, thanks for portraying a character that isn't just like together all the time.
Yep.
You know, I see a lot of myself in the sort of awkwardness of Eric. Mm-hmm. And I think he's absolutely endearing, but also like way, way, way in over his head.
Oh, yeah. Eric is super great, and like one of the really interesting comments I've gotten about him regularly, and I can't speak to the accuracy of this, but other people have said it about Eric a couple of times, is that he reads to them like someone who's on the Asperger's or autism spectrum, and that's never been my intention. Wow. Actually, I've never intended to portray someone with Asperger's or autism, but the people who have spoken about it say things like, I'm on the spectrum, or I know people on the spectrum, and this is like a really good and like it feels like a really natural and really like welcome portrayal of that kind of a character, which I'm really flattered that I'm able to portray someone like that people can embrace in that way. But yeah, like I'm really just going at it from, this guy is, he doesn't like people because people are complicated. He does like machines because machines are basic and he can just fix them. And that's why he really doesn't like Pi, because Pi is a machine who's also a person. And so it's like these, like a couple very basic choices. It's like, can't get along with people, puts his foot in his mouth all the time, loves machines. And then like there's a lot of sort of extra stuff that spawns off of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like, especially in the last couple episodes, for you as a player, like not just for Eric's motivation, but I feel like Eric is an opportunity for you to disregard me telling you not to do stupid things.
Oh, yeah.
So people, but this, like, is an interesting thing because people have said to, I think both of us, been like, why didn't you, Adam was warning you, he warned you over and over and over.
Yep. Why did you blow a hole in the spaceship?
Why did you do this?
Yep.
But it's so, like, let's clear it up. It's intentional, right? You know the risks and are choosing to make the game more interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, there's this one thing that is true of me, Steven, which is that I always, like, I get bored also, like JP, but the way that I get bored is I just make shit harder for everybody by making a weird decision right away. So, like, that's part of what goes on, is that, like, I'm like, yeah, let's find out how far Adam will go if I do this thing. But then the other thing is that, like, Eric cares about certain things much more than his life, really. And, like, psychic research is one of them. So, like, his goals from the very beginning have been to, like, find a way to find a telekinetically reactive material, experiment with it, figure out a way to weaponize it, like, start publishing information about it. Like, experimenting directly with those crystals, even though it's very dangerous and even though the GM made it super clear, it was obvious to me that it was dangerous. Like, and I took proper precautions, right? I was like, okay, Adam is broadcasting how dangerous this is. I'm going to try to set up some fictional positioning to help protect myself. But at the end of the day, it's what Eric is willing to die for, basically.
Nothing bad happened to Eric.
Yeah. So, well, no, I almost died once.
Well, that one time.
Almost. Yeah. So, yeah, like, it's, I don't know. I have more fun making characters that are willing to risk big things.
Yeah, and Eric feels very much like a product of, in the same way Alpharius does, a product of the current sort of arc of the story. So for me, the kind of place where we're at, and if you you probably will have picked this stuff up if you've watched before, but ostensibly you're watching this because you haven't. You want to get caught up. So every 10 or 12 episodes or so, we've followed a kind of story arc for the characters. It's been about, not necessarily a particular thing. It's not like this is the pirate's arc. It's been about various themes. So, you know, the idea of what is intelligence as an arc, or the idea of the, like, global impact and how the character's actions affect the universe is kind of an arc. The arc we're in now is a bit about the idea of bodies in a lot of ways, right? Mm-hmm. About, you know, because of Pi and the idea of Pi being embodied, or like, is Pi the ship? Is Pi this other thing? Pi has a lot of questions about that. Piani's perception changing constantly because of the eye.
Right.
You know, like, Alpharius, you know, being part human and part robot, it's been kind of about the space that the characters occupy physically and kind of what that means for them. And I think that it's interesting having those two characters fit into that, and then watching that sort of spread out as we move on. Because as these arcs end, some characters stay with us, you know, like Piani and Higgs, and some characters like Prosper leave when the arc that contains them reaches a normal feeling conclusion, right? Like, that arc for Prosper was really about religion and responsibility. It was about choice. Right. And Prosper made a choice. And as such, you know, we retired that character. But, you know, another example would be Mr. Sicarian. And I wanted to, before we talk about the NPCs, I just want to address Titanfall, because I think that if people were to point to, you know, the big episode in the last little while in Swansong, if you ask them, like, you know, what's an episode you remember, that episode, the big arc, is one that people will remember, I think, you know, for as long as we do the show. And it was a gamble. Okay, it was a gamble on your part, Jeff. Like, because, you know, the system rewards character, the rewards players for having goals and achieving them. And, you know, we talked about it at the beginning. I said you can make goals that are small. Like, Eric has been getting little bits and pieces of experience as we go. But the big gamble for Jeff with Mr. Sicarian was, okay, I have this enemy. I have I have an arch nemesis, and I'm gonna kill him. That's my jam. And it's going to be worth a ton of experience, but it's not going to happen for a while. So that whole arc had things that built up to it.
So that was, like, a really awesome episode, but we can't forget the episode where Sicarian got his freaky magic power.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Because that that stands out even more in my mind, actually, because like the Titan fight, we saw it coming, and it was like, okay, we're gonna go face this guy. It's gonna be an epic showdown. But then it was just like, what were we doing? We were in hyperspace, and Sakarian had to just like fix something on the surface of the ship, and then we had all this emotional backstory that just came out, and it was like, whoa.
Yeah, it was during the two-parter with the War Mind, and with the War Mind being awakened and heading for Andoni to blow it up and to slow the process down, Mr. Sakarian had to go outside into exposed directly to drive space.
Yeah.
So what was your thinking around that? Like, I know you and I, Jeff, had a bunch of conversations about Photenhauer and about Mr. Titan and kind of all that stuff. But how did that arc feel like for you as a player?
I get emotionally even just talking about it, to be honest with you. Like, it's I know we all love our characters. Sakarian's my fucking baby boy, man. I love just and again, it's a case of like. It's a couple things, like Vincent Longbourn and Victarion, other characters like that. I protected the fuck out of them. They made a lot of decisions purely off of, I don't want this character to die. He's going to live no matter what happens. Like, if other people die, that sucks. He'll try to walk that line of, like, if I can help you, I will, but I'm going to save myself. Sakarian wasn't like that at all. Like, I just really, I took on the bodyguard thing and the whole, like, his role is, he's a selfless protector and he's going to live and die by that. And then the dice just, and you kind of like decided that was going to work out okay in the end, which does not always fucking happen. And it's kind of a funny thing you touched on, too. He did not have +3 strength, +2 dexterity. He had guns, he had cool stuff. He had +1 dexterity. That was his thing. That was his jam. And he lived and died by the nimbleness of his hands, I guess. So it was cool because I was, you know, to Steven's credit, that's the second time where I was like, and I actually remember that episode. There was a lot of him being like, can you do this thing? And they're like, no, not really. And he's like, what about this? And they're like, nah, no one's going to do that. And he's like, are you guys going to help out at all? They're like, nah, we're flying a ship. And I was like, okay, I step outside. Like, I was like, goodbye, Sakarian.
There was a split moment where I thought about trying to kill your character because like that's what I was tasked with. But I could not fathom how unbelievably pissed off you would be if I actually did that. And so that's actually the main reason why I didn't act on what I did is because I didn't want to be the one that killed Mr. Sakari. Not because I didn't care about it. I wouldn't care about it in game, but I didn't want to piss you off as a person.
Let it be known. I think I would be sad and dark, but I give this up as a form of art form. Like if it made sense, like I would be actually upset as a human being if JP just like was like, all right, start off the episode. I don't really have a reason for this. I'm just going to shoot you in the head. Like, I'd be like, well,
and that's what
you're shooting on my brain.
So, yeah. I mean, I know you're scared of JP having his character shoot your character in the back of the head. It's happened to me pretty much every episode since the beginning of the show. I'm like, yeah, you see this guy, and he seems like scared, and he looks like he needs your help. And Higgs is like, fuck it, I shoot him in the face. I'm like, ball that up and throw it away.
Yeah.
Well, that was like when we were on the spaceship and you were like, these guys come running towards you and they're like, please help us. Don't like, do the thing. And just death.
Which, I think, I mean, this is the risk that we all, if we weren't playing a game, if this wasn't a role-playing game, we could just take the rules and throw them out and sit around and just make stuff up.
Yeah.
But like you said earlier, Jeff, part of the fun is like, well, now we have to deal with the repercussions of the fact that I rolled double ones.
Right.
And, like just it has to be dealt with. We have all these conversations as a group. I'm thinking particularly of conversations you and I have had, Jeff, between episodes or on breaks where, we talk about what's good for the show as a thing, mm-hmm. and how we want to handle certain things. Right? Like you and I had a talk about Titanfall beforehand where I'm like, it'll be on us to make it sound fun. Because the combat itself is I roll a d20 and then you roll a d20 and I roll one.
Exactly.
And then you roll one. And we just go back and forth. So it's gonna be on us.
It's an hour long fight too.
Yeah, to like narrate our way through that. And it's a challenge that we were both kind of like, okay, well we'll take this on and we'll let the dice decide what happens. Because that's the only kind of fitting thing for the character. But I think that in situations where things have happened on screen that seem like the characters are disagreeing or we're fighting, like we ask each other permission for stuff all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like the whole thing with Prosper and Higgs during the break, the two of you had like talked about that, right? Like,
yeah, JP was like, is it cool if I like a quick message? Yeah. Like, I want to be clear here. Like, we don't script it, right?
Yeah.
No, no.
Like, we're just confirming that each of us is okay with the choices that each of us would like to make now.
Yeah. I think the conversation was like, are you cool with this? Yeah, yeah, I guess.
And I was like, yep.
Okay, we'll see what happens.
And we agree as people to the stakes that we're willing to put to our characters to say, okay, if we agree, we're going to go into this unknown situation where someone might die.
Yep.
So that's the thing.
Like, and then like when Adam let me stand up, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I guess it's fighting time. And then I sent JP a message and I was like, do you want to just see how this plays out? And JP was like,
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
Well, at that point, I was a little bit.
Hand, I'm not going to kill him because.
Yeah, I was a little bit fearful of death just because I know the mechanics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, there's no way Higgs wins that fight.
Right.
At all. And then I rolled terribly.
Yeah.
That was one of the crucial moments where Higgs played or rolled very, very poorly.
Yeah.
And so that's what the Titan Sicarian fight was about, right? It was us. I was on the fucking edge of my seat just as much as anybody else because. Every time we made a roll, I was like, okay, what's going to happen? Like, what'll happen to the rest of the crew if Titan, like, kills Mr. Sicarian? And, like, what are we going to do? Because the stakes were so high because it was such a big deal situation.
I enjoyed every, like, it was, for so many people, this comment just resonates very truly with me as well, is that it felt like a show because even the way that was revealed, it was supposed to be fate, right? I was supposed to fight fate, and it was going to be like this very easy, like mini boss. Like, I'm pissed off at you.
Yeah.
You did a wrong thing, and then you revealed for the first time ever. Like, we've seen like doors and glimpses, like little cutaways to him, but he responds like, "Yeah, the fight's on" or whatever. And it was like,
yeah,
that was an end of a season type finale moment that people, if that was on like X-Files, would be shitting their pants over for 6 months. Like, they would
have, we'd have a whole summer of Reddit posts being like,
they would be flipping out. And there's just so many, like, that was really well done by you. But again, like, kind of a fun thing that I think was a part of the legend of Sicarian was a lot of the emotional stuff too. Like, I actually went into it, he was going to be, he's based on a Harry Dresden character that's just like pretty straight and narrow, kind of archetypical, like very not super creative that way. But through him being kind of closed off that way, the scene where he encounters his wife on the top of that ship ends up being really emotional. And like, we didn't touch on that storyline a whole bunch, not a whole bunch, but just that moment got to be that much more punctual because it was like a completely different side of a character that we otherwise had not seen a whole lot of. But I thought there was a really cool juxtaposition throughout the show too, of like, it wasn't completely the other side of the coin. We've seen some emotionality from him. He's had connections with Higgs and the God talk with Pi. Like, there was moments where you saw that Sicarian wasn't just a knife or a gun. He was other things as well. But also you guys were touching on a little bit, but like, the other part that I liked about him too was, again, all the times we all tried to kill him, myself included, but like, the whole Wu explosion in that factory scene, and like, just how improbable even that going down the way it was. Like, that I remember that moment too, where we were all in the ship. We're like, well, are we going to go back and get him? And everyone's like, are you going to go get him? Are you going to go get him? Are you coming with me? All right, I go out. And then, like, finally, like, Piani's like, well, shit, okay, yeah, I go too. And it's just really interesting the way that went down. And this is another part where I any opportunity I can, I just want to give a shout out to the people that made like artwork for this to come to life. That video,
there was a GIF that someone made, right?
The grenade coming down and like Wu out of focus in the background and that kind of stuff. Like, you guys are, there's just incredibly talented people out there, and for them
that's
to spend any time
ended
and energy
that
on
episode,
show,
right?
Yes.
Yep.
Because we started the next episode, and I remember showing that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Wu is probably, if not the most, certainly one of the most beloved NPCs to grace at least Swan Song, but of all the shows, just one of the favorites and one of the most involved, I would say too, is actually a part of the crew. So
somebody told me, somebody told me earlier that Wu was on the ship longer than Victor was, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that I think was important about Connor Wu was that Connor was like legitimately just like a normal dude that got sucked up into the Swan Song's weird whirlwind
sucked
of chaos.
Is an interesting way of putting
it. Yeah, like he got dragged along.
Because you know what? I got to be honest, Adam. My perception of Lou near the end is that even though you might have portrayed him that way, he loved every second of it.
Right. Oh, and yeah. That was so. There's this thing that we can do in fiction, and Gavin in Mirror Shades has been reminding me a little bit of Wu in this way, but kind of in a flip side, in that to create an illustration of what the characters are like versus everyone else in the universe, we have someone that's a foil to them in some way. So similar in some, but contrastingly very different. And I think the thing about Connor was that he was just like along for the adventure, and like really into, you know, trying stuff out and like being a part of the team. And I think that there were lots of moments where I had the opportunity to use him to coax out aspects of your characters, right?
Right.
Like there were sort of touching moments that were touching not because of something that I did or said as Connor, but for space that I created for you to be different or vulnerable, right? Where Connor was not a character who was trying to kill or backstab or, you know, he didn't want to pull one over on anybody. So having that space to be like, oh, now I don't have to try to defend myself or whatever, was a way to kind of give you guys some opportunity to kind of talk things out. So I think that people were attached to Connor because I played him very much like a normal kind of person. Like he was very kind of helpless in a lot of ways. And was for me really fun to play in terms of just kind of giving some space to the narrative a little bit.
And before we move on, go ahead.
I just want to I know JP knows, but like, do you guys and I think Adam knows, you guys know about my Connor Wu troll at TwitchCon?
Yeah,
can you guys hear about that?
I never heard that. No.
No. Why?
So.
That was pretty good.
It was during Drop Frames.
I was pretty caught off guard too.
There was a Q&A. And I saw this kid in line Q&A, and I saw that he had a Swan Song shirt up. So I walked all the way around backstage and back to the other side, and I ran up to this kid. I'm like, please, please tell him that you're Connor Wu, and then ask your question. And sure enough, he goes up and he doesn't even skip a beat. He's just like, yeah, hi, my name's Connor Wu. And then he just blurts out his question. And like, if JP was processing, his question was already out.
JP, it sounded like you were waiting for the question. But like, the funny thing in the audience was people were like, there were like shouts of surprise. And like, yeah. Something else.
Well, that's why I was so confused, is because I had a hard time hearing the people talk in general because we didn't have an ear. And it was kind of muffled, and then it got kind of cringy because I was just like, what's his name? What did they say his name was? And then the crowd was just like, it's Wu. I was like, oh, okay.
Nice.
Because then you came out on stage.
Like, JP didn't even know.
Yeah, no, we came out on stage after that. He's like, his name's Connor Wu, you idiot.
People, the video would be on the / whatever the TwitchCon Kappa during the Drop Frames VOD.
It's on the Drop Frames TwitchCon.
The Q&A.
Towards the end.
I like that character. All I want to say about Connor Wu is that it is an awesome example of a character that is like not real that you can get attached to. Right. And so I think from that perspective, a lot of credit goes to Adam for just like, you know, I mean, how many NPCs. You know, everyone wants every NPC to be that gimmicky NPC, but really there are NPCs that have X factor and there are NPCs that don't. And like Connor Wu was an NPC who had some X factor.
Yeah.
And I think there's also, you probably gauge, this maybe is a question for you, but I assume you have to gauge like how the crew responds to an NPC to even learn if that NPC is going to be
honestly
more complex.
Like, the funny thing about Connor especially was that He was the longest surviving NPC the show had seen because most characters didn't make a whole episode.
Did you expect me to kill him?
I mean, I don't know if I would say I expected it, but the first thing I did though when you started threatening him was instead of being like getting in your face or whatever. Or getting scared, he was just like, oh, you're obviously joking, right? Like, yep, now you're going to shoot me. That's funny, right?
I felt like that was one of the first NPCs and pretty much characters in the show that actually challenged Higgs, like ever, about anything. And I think that's why he stayed so long on the ship, is because, like, you didn't really put any threats in his way, and I didn't kill him.
not to toot your horn too hard, Adam, but I think one of the signs of you being like a master storyteller is that Woo was such a hit, but not all your NPCs are meant to be big hits and too try-hardy, because I think the show would be really dumb for the most part if, like, and here comes Gregor McGregor, and he's like, Adam's just like, it's the Adam Hour, like, it's just going off, you know, but every character has a spectrum to him. Like, this one is a character, that is a person we can believe in, but they come and go, or, like, maybe they come back, but it's different, and I think you do a really good job of balancing, like, we knew Wu had a Nika Starlight obsession, but that was also, like, linked into, like, insecurities and sadness and loneliness and, like, really deep emotions that had its own kind of arc, which gave power to his eventual death. If he was all comedic relief, that would almost be a funny scene, but because a lot of people were really cheering for this this underdog, it meant a lot.
Yeah, and I think it was a perfect arc where I'm really happy with where it went, because his eventual end was very much just a summation of the whole arc of that character. He just was not cut out for this life. And it said something about the swan song, and it's colored the game ever since, right? And I think that what I do with, I've done it with Pi a little bit, I've done it with Connor, the idea is that there are certain NPCs that are a mirror on the crew, that take what you as a group give me, and I can push back into the world by way of those characters. So, like, with Connor, I was like, okay, will you protect him? Can he survive? Right? Like, he's just in over his head, he doesn't know any better. What are you going to do with him versus a Pi situation, where Pi is this sort of tenuous, dangerous thing, and I think that we've gone back and forth on seeing that character sort of change in that way, but still act as a mirror for the characters.
Real quick, Adam, too, are you worried that with Howard you can never overcome how great he was, and
that's basically the peak of your life? I think that's, I'm done. Like, I think I'm just Howard.
I think you can retire now.
I'll never. Well, I was talking to Steven about this after Howard. So, for recap purposes, Howard the Octopus was on two episodes. He was the cargo. There's a planet on which these highly genetically engineered humanoids are uplifting animals. So they're making animals human intelligence level and trying to give them like psychic powers and things like that. And Howard was you picked Howard up, and I distinctly remember, like, I knew he was gonna be a talking octopus, but I just, Jeff, your reaction when I was like, you're like, I open the box, I'm like, yeah, it's an octopus, and you're just like, what the fuck, Adam?
Well, I think that's too is like, I think me and Jeff played that pretty well in character, because, like, I was vehemently against it, and Jeff was kind of, and then it grew on him pretty quickly, and I was like, all right, this is a cool dynamic. Like, let's roll with this. And it only, like, benefited that character, because then it got back on ship, and it got even crazier when he met the rest of the crew, so...
Yeah, and cool. So Steven and I were talking a bit after a couple of weeks after the second episode, when he was delivered and went on his way, the teary farewell. I was to Steven, I think you were like, yeah, this is your Horkin friend. That's it.
Yep. This is your Horkin friend. You will never get over this. They'll be asking you to buy some jewels for the rest of eternity. I killed Horkin friend in that episode too. Horkin friend was around for one episode.
And the thing about Howard is that if this Howard is the opposite of all that nice stuff you said about me being a good storyteller and stuff, Jeff. Howard is the character where the toy company made a toy of an octopus and then came to me and was like, write this into the show. Yep. We need to sell these toys.
Howard knows Jar Jar Binks. So
that's true. For people asking, that was episode 21.
Good
times. 21. The very start of season 3.
He indirectly comes back, like, he's part of the reason why Sicarian beat Titan in a big, big way. Without those healing injectors, there's no way he does it.
Yeah. So for those for those of you wondering, because Howard will come up occasionally. So Howard the Octopus is a character that like Mr. Sicarian and like Prosper has moved from the street level part of the game, you know, the 4 hours that we play, semi-weekly, up into the GM scale. I have a game that I get to play myself that is, you know, an hour, hour and a half of kind of just managing the factions in the universe. And so Howard has moved into the faction that he belongs in now. He's doing his own stuff with this pirate fleet. So there is a chance that that we'll see Howard or Howard's actions again. I think, you know, we talked a little bit about, I just want to make sure we had our NPC base covered. And maybe this is a good first question to ask if we want to start looking at the Q&A.
Yeah, I think so, we got about 20, 25 minutes until we take a break. So
sure. Yeah. Let's get started in on that. So, I mean, what's for you, what's your favorite NPC so far? What's an NPC that you think was like really interesting to interface with? Doesn't have to be like a big character. It could be somebody smaller, or we could just talk a little bit more about characters we've already seen.
I think the global answer would probably be Pi for everyone, right? Because
everyone's
had pretty different interactions with him across. Both me and Wheat have had different interactions the entire show, and I think for Jeff and Steven, Pi has been a character that every single character they've had has been a completely different experience with him.
Oh yeah.
He's probably, like, someone was asking who the main character of the show is. It might be Pi.
Well, I think the thing is, the main character, the protagonist of the show, is the ship, right? The Swan yeah. Song. And someone mentioned once on one of the Q&As, and I wish that I could attribute this properly, but they said that the whether they live or die, whatever, people come onto the Swan Song one way and they leave it a very different way. Sometimes they leave it a corpse, but it changes them. So anyone who passes through the Swan Song becomes something else.
I thought this was cool too. They called it a kingmaker.
Yeah, right. Mm. Yeah, it's a thing that just modifies the people that enter into it. And I think that part of what makes Pi feel like that is that, you know, in a lot of sci-fi, the trope sort of is that the AI and the ship are kind of one and the same. You know, computer on the Enterprise has a voice. The minds in the culture novels. You know, the ship character from Ancillary Justice, like, they all kind of like live as the ship.
Someone said the Jizz episode. That is one of them. It's completely off topic. That is.
Oh my god!
Laughing with you guys for 4 hours straight was pretty fun.
Oh god!
That whole episode was just ruined from the beginning.
That was 30. Was that 38? Genders
it was
without number.
It was barely. Yeah,
genders without number.
That's the that's what the episode's entitled. So.
That was, it was like full circle. We just, oh my god.
Yeah.
That's like, that's one of my favorite, like, I just want to point out that moment. That was one of my favorite moments on the show so far. Because, like, when you're playing on a show like this with people like Adam and JP and Wheat and Jeff for long enough, eventually you get to a point where you can all just kind of, like, do a thing and you don't really have to ask each other. And I was just like, yeah, here's some, like, you know, obvious, you know, super future, like, gender reference. And Jeff just, like, he got it immediately and he just went straight with it. And it was just, yeah, it was a glorious moment. Oh, the heavens so opened up and we had perfect role playing for 3 minutes straight.
That's good.
God.
Yeah, I mean, I think Pi has been a challenge as a character overall, because there is this temptation to, I think some GMs like to Gandalf a party, right? They like to be like, I'm going to try and keep the party going in a particular direction, and I don't want the hobbits to get lost on the way to Mount Doom, so I'm going to play Gandalf. I'm a level 47 million wizard, and I'm just going to keep nudging you with my wizard staff. And the thing with Pi is I'm trying to invert that by making Pi alternately totally helpless to you and completely a threat, depending on how you perceive their actions and depending on what is happening at any given moment. And by making Pi as human as possible and as flawed and confused as possible, it makes it so that it's harder for you all to come to any kind of consensus of like, yeah, no murderous robot, let's get rid of him. Yeah. And I think it's there are moments where it's been alternately like very aggravating for us and very like interesting and sort of like you get invested in it. And that's why I think Pi has stuck around so long, because I try to let Pi change, and y'all are capable of accepting that as a thing.
Yeah. I feel like the character, just like a one-off NPC, the character that you had, I think it was Alfarious, but it might have been Sicarion, where Jeff did the Texas accent to try to,
oh
like,
my god,
That he was the ace employee or whatever.
You're in a gun shop on Asa as you were stopping by to go somewhere else.
Yeah, it was just like a completely random. You just went in there to like look to see what they had, and I think was that where you got the? No, you got that from the. What did you even get there?
I don't even remember. Like, it just no one seems to. But yeah, it was just I was like, all right, well, I guess Jeff, we're gonna. And it was like you were saying, Steven, like I guess we're just gonna have 3 minutes of doing this.
That was the car, and it was Mr. D. It was the car dealer.
There was some kind of weird dealership thing, and yeah, and that's just. I mean, that was Ronald just.
Oh, you were buying grenades.
Yeah, and that was just an opportunity for us to explore this like little weird part of the universe.
It was the guy you bought the nav computer from. That's what it was. You went in there and haggled him for a nav computer that we got upgraded that week for the swan song.
Yeah.
And it was going to cost us a shit ton.
I'm the business guy.
You were the business guy, so you went in there and you like in character conned him for a character that's never done it before.
Yeah.
It was really funny. It's really funny.
Yeah, that's really fun. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. I really like the entire altercation with Nika Starlight on the planet where we had to where we got hired by.
Nika and that whole situation was my kind of homage to. God, I can't remember the name of the character, but there's like an anime from the 70s or 80s. I think it's a Macross, one of the Macross animes. There's a character in that who's like a kind of starlet. And she was interesting because she came from the GM turn. She came from the GM turn into the game and then back out again as a result of a bunch of stuff that was happening kind of in the background. And Nika was a way for me to show that the universe isn't all like guns and blood and drugs and betrayal. It's like pop music and... silliness sometimes, like these religion. Things exist. Yeah, like there's just like stuff happening. And
what was that?
I have no idea what that was.
That was my bad.
Sweet jazz music. I like the Vikings, by the way.
Trying to get you
a great job with them.
Yeah, the Vikings are good.
Yeah. Well, and that again, like that too, was just an example of taking the name of the planet and being like, I guess they could. Yep, they could teach you some stuff. I think that of all the NPCs. So far, though, that I like every time I get to play them, I can't wait. Is Rajani Van Dorn?
She might be my favorite.
Yeah, she's pretty fun to play. She's also kind of like had a character arch.
Yeah,
like, within the game, she's grown and done things within the game that is very interesting.
Yeah, and I think
Sakarian's a little upset with the lack of respect to the fact that he. Put her in that position, but it's fine. I'm sure he'll get over it.
It's true.
I like Rajani because she's, I think, as complicated as the PCs are. That she's not obvious. She's not like one layer. I've had enough time with her to kind of build up, not necessarily like a backstory. Like I couldn't tell you like where she was born and all that stuff. But I at least feel like I've got a pretty good grasp on how she would respond to any given thing. And I think she'll be around for a while, especially because what happened with, like you said, Jeff, what happened with Sakarian, that was a move that shifted a faction quite dramatically, right? You got rid of Mustafa Lee, and Calliopea, who are kind of hostile old guard members of the syndicate. And you've replaced them with this slightly unstable kind of like, she's on screen, she's dangerous. Like she's a pretty cutthroat individual, and so it's been interesting thinking about how their the syndicates changed because of that.
Yeah,
that was fun. I mean, it was the whole warehouse coming down, but that was like three bosses in one getting dropped. Yeah.
That was an epic episode.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what made Connor's death so interesting because you were like. Like, we saw Sakarian have to do the math and make that hard choice. And I really like the way that you portrayed it as a hard decision, that it was like, this is a thing that Sakarian's going to do, but, you know, I'm not, as a player, that excited about having to do it. But collateral damage happens, and
I'm sorry, Wu.
Yeah. I feel like, for me, the most interesting characters are the ones we were like, I know exist, and I know we're doing things, but I have no idea because... We created them, but I have no idea what you're doing with them when it comes to Luminary 22. And I only know and this is kind of, I guess, peeling it back a little bit. I only know 19 of them. I don't even know all 22 of them. Mm-hmm. And there's also, there's a lot of things with that I just don't know, because I kind of just said, like, this is kind of what I want. And these are kind of the things that I think are cool. And this is the name that we'll give them. And you're going to tie it to NPCs. And here you go. And that's kind of how that started.
I think the thing about Luminary that's really fun for me from a GM perspective is that I can, like you did, I can just backfill the organization. I can just be like, oh yeah, this random janitor has been part of Luminary all along.
The whole time.
Yeah. But also that, I know that you know just the names of some of them, and that I can kind of play around with that. And I think it's interesting. There's definitely a place where the game took a bit of a turn that way.
Yeah. And I don't even know, like, if they will, like, it would be cool if they weren't even a big deal. Like, if they never even came into the story and were, like, a major focus. Like, right now in the exact where we're at in the story, they are, just because of what's going on with Pi and whatnot. And we'll talk about that in the next hour and kind of catch people up right to where we're at. But I don't know, like, what the problem's doing right now. Like, it's cool to think about, like, what they're doing, but I have no idea what they're doing.
the best part of a conspiracy is not, it's not finding out the truth, right? Like, we didn't watch the X-Files so that eventually at the end, Mulder and Scully would finally figure it all out.
Job complete.
Exactly, The idea of Luminary is that, yes, there's a sector-wide conspiracy occurring, and Higgs is part of it, but in typical Higgsian fashion, doesn't understand the whole thing and maybe doesn't have his, like, thoughts straight about who's what. So that we only ever see it through Higgs. And so it's a very sort of a very limited thing. And it allows me to do some kind of, like, weird strings pulling. And now, because we all know that this Luminary situation exists, you'll always look at things that seem to be coincidence and be like, wait, maybe they were pulling the strings all along.
Yeah. And the other thing too is that there's only 7 names that people know, but we've met at least 15 of these people, 13 of these people.
I think more than half certainly of Luminary have appeared on screen or been talked about on screen at some point.
JP, I have a question for you. How are you going to feel when you find out that Piani is the mastermind behind
that? Oh, shit.
See, but I know who the mastermind is, and
you think
I think
you
I
do.
Know.
We have the big moment of the back of the huge supervillain chair, and it just turns around. And it's like, Higgs, you wee bastard.
Yeah.
It's actually a wheelchair. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be into it. I'd be into it. But yeah, like that. That's kind of the thing. Is each week for me, I'm interested just to see like what Adam pulls from that, and every once in a while I'll just like poke at it as well. But it's. They don't seem like big players at all in the story, but to me they're just like super fucking cool, just to know that they exist in that world, and it's totally that's 100% for me, like that. No one else will ever know that, and I'm sure half of these guys won't even ever have a role in the story.
Well, Jeff and I get that a little bit with Sakarian and Prosper still acting out in the universe. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Adam asks us every once in a while, but I think by and large they're doing their own thing. And it's cool to just sort of know and wonder, like, I wonder what's happening with Cabral after.
Yeah, and Prosper bits left bits and pieces of the GM turn always make their way into the show. You know, like when I describe background color, right? When I say, you know, you see a TV screen and it's playing a newscast, or you know, you hear something on the radio, or there's like a protest outside this spaceport. That stuff isn't just made up. It's the results of what's happening month to month in the universe at large. Mm-hmm. And some stuff comes to the surface and becomes a big deal. Other things just like bubble underneath, because again, I want to create a universe that feels consistent in the fact that it's dynamic, that if you leave a planet and you come back 6 months later, it won't be the same because things will have happened there without you.
Yeah.
So like things like the Purity Initiative are purely from the GM turn. They started there and went from
Well, I think we're like 10 minutes from break. We could do a little bit of questions, then continue on and part 3, and then do an actual like catch everyone up to right where we're at. Because the thing about this show that I'm actually kind of discovering as we go through this is there's no way in hell we could recap 39 weeks.
There's
also no way in hell that, like, those 39 weeks don't, like, they have moments in them that matter. But for the most part, you can kind of jump in with the show because it kind of deals with episode to episode what's going on in that. Like, they're kind of self-contained a little bit.
Well, that's sort of what – I mean, they're self-contained certainly within arcs, right? Like, you can grab a mission of the crew and see that arc. But what I think is really valuable about sitting down and talking about the characters and what's sort of come before is to give context to those things. So now there's one place that if you do jump in at some point and watch through and you're missing some important context, you can come back and you can watch this episode and say, oh, okay, cool, I get why – you know, Higgs was hostile towards this character. I didn't understand that before, and now I have a way to kind of look at that.
Or chat, if someone comes in to a future episode, like 10 episodes from now, and they're like, what is this? I don't understand. Chat can be like, oh, go watch episode 39.5, because it tells you, it catches you up quickly without needing to watch 400 hours of Swan Song.
What the, what were you going to bring up?
I was going to say, you know what, I've been thinking about the recap show a little bit, and there's a part of me that was like, you know, it might be interesting to actually try to recap a few times throughout the year in order to, like, keep those sort of quarterlies, anyone could come in type thing. Because you're right.
I think we will in the future, for sure.
The daunting task of, like, 30-some weeks is, like, rough for anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I think this will become more of a frequent thing, for sure. Yeah, let's Adam, do you want to just pull these? You've got some highlights.
Yeah, I'll grab a couple. So there are a few, like, a lot of people I liked watching the questions, because the questions that came in to me show things that people are interested in or that weren't necessarily clear, like, on screen. And one thing I wanted to talk about was the sort of cinematic nature of the show, because if you're used to playing Dungeons and Dragons, you know, just with your friends at home, there's nowhere in the Dungeon Master's Guide that says, like, describe things that happen off screen, talk about dissolve cuts, talk about like, you know, talk about subtitles. And that's a thing that I've, you know, I added into the game pretty early on when I realized that it would be a cool way for me to feed information to the audience that the characters wouldn't necessarily directly interact with. That idea of helping us all think of the game as a TV show or a series of movies really helps me get into a cinematic mindset. It helps me think about it that way too. And I just wanted to know if that was something that, because, you know, people are always afraid of metagaming, right? Like, so have there been any times where you felt like it was a struggle not acting on the things that you knew that your character didn't know? Or does that, the way that I describe things cinematically, is that something that affects the way that you play your characters at all?
I would just jump in here, and I don't know how everyone else feels, but I have to imagine there's probably a similar thing in that. But, like, I think that each of us realizes that in just the way you said, like, you're presenting it in that way, and that we can sort of continue, you know, we can keep that spirit of sort of a cinematic storytelling alive by, you know, by sort of knowing that information, not necessarily using it to our advantage in terms of, like, we're metagaming and we know it, but I think that it actually does present opportunities for us to create interesting stories based around the fact that everyone's like, oh no, don't go in there, the fucking killer is in there, but like, you know, we could still make decisions off that information. I think that's partially, I sort of give praise to my peers as players here, because I feel like we all understand that very well and respect that, and as a result it's never an issue. And I could imagine in some, you know, circles, I've read all sorts of, you know, tabletop stories about, man, these got one guy who just metagames the shit and ruins our group. Like, I've never experienced that with this crew. So, in fact, I think I can think of many times where someone has said, wait a second, did they tell us that? And, you know, and JP, for example, is like, no, you don't know that. And it's like, okay, erase it out. Like,
yeah.
So, I think that it's just kind of the unwritten rule.
Yeah, and I think that something like an example where we all contributed to do that together, to kind of like take that step back and be in a bit more of a like director stance for our characters, was the episode where with Titanfall, right? Because Titanfall, the last bit of the episode was the actual fight, but we did flashbacks. Like, I remember, JP, you changed the overlay so that Steven's box said Victor Kovacs.
Yes.
When we did the flashback to
Did you tell me that was going to happen?
Yeah, we had talked about it beforehand where I was like, we're going to do a flashback.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And I didn't know you were going to change it on the overlay, but when we came back and we hadn't, because Victor, you were the last person to enter that scene, and just having that opportunity to be, again, this sort of dramatic irony, to be like, wait, we're doing something different. We're taking a bit of a risk as a group to move towards this big important moment for a character. And y'all have been fantastic all the way through at being able to take a step back and give the spotlight to someone else, to be like, this is an important scene for Mr. Sicarian or for Alfarious or for Eric, and not just be like, I want to be in the scene, and just be like, yeah, but then Piani says, hey, Piani does some stuff, you know, like we're. And I think this is a thing that we just developed over time.
Yeah.
But it does take, like you say, a little bit of that accepting, like, it's about the overall thing we're doing together and not just about any one person having a great time.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like that's just part of like good role playing anyway, no matter in what format you're doing your show or your role playing your game. Knowing when it's someone else's turn to be the main character and when it's your turn to be a supporting character is a really good skill to have.
I'm just going to pull this question from here because it's specifically for me. Why did Higgs kill Randy? There was a very specific reason why Higgs killed Randy, but it didn't come into my mind why until much later on in the show. But there's a reason why Randy died.
I mean, the canon reason was you just don't like loose ends.
Yeah.
That was what Higgs said.
Yeah.
People always ask when a character dies, and I think it's just the corniest, most cliche thing possible. So I can only assume they're not asking in seriousness. They're gonna be like, "Yeah, so when is everybody gonna find out that he didn't kill Randy, and he's gonna come back as a cyborg and murder him?"
Yay!
You know, like if I wanted to be like a bad '60s sci-fi TV show, that would be the big reveal of who's in charge of Luminary. It's Randy. It's been Randy all along.
Yeah. It's Randy's all the way down.
Yeah,
it's true. People ask every time someone important dies. It's like, when's Cyborg Connor coming back?
You know, it's cold in Russia.
The entire factory exploded.
There's actually a lot of questions about Randy.
Yeah,
someone's like, "Who's Randy? Why did you shoot him?" I think the canon is that it was just a guy that I had conned with before, that was there on that planet where we started in episode one. Because I think that we needed a way to get off the group. And there was, maybe it was because we started Mirror Shades around the same time, so the idea of circles in the Shadowrun world was in my mind, and I was like, well, do I just know a guy? And you were just like, yeah, totally. So that's like how that happened. That's how that that came to be.
So there's a question for me, but I actually think it applies equally for everybody, because I've had in-character conversations either through Pi or through another character with each and every one of you of this regard. So someone says, how did Adam prepare himself to hash out intense philosophical discussions with quick and snappy responses? I think all of us have had to like come up against that at some point, because like
you catch me off guard with that shit though, 100%.
Sci-fi is a kind of fiction about imagining what the future might be like to help us better understand what life is like now, like what our reality is like. And some of my favorite parts of the game, we have this contrast between like big action moments and like funny moments where we're all laughing about jizz music. But some of my favorite stuffs have been conversations. Have been conversations where what I'm really doing is asking the players, what do you think about this through the lens of your character, right? Like, how far do you think a person would go? You know, like, I ask Wheat constantly by way of Pi and Piani, how far would you go to protect your kid, right? Like, if everyone around you thinks your kid is turning into a psycho, what would you do, right? And so I use the character to push on that stuff. Same way with conversations with Steven, where I'm like, let's talk about religion, Steven. Let's talk about free will, right? Let's talk about
sex.
Let's talk about violence.
You and me.
Yeah.
Right, and that's...
But, like, your big question for Prosper was, would you let a planet get destroyed if your god told you? Answer is yes.
Evidently yes, yeah. Evidently Prosper would. But that's because role-playing games are conversations, right? It's just us sitting around talking about stuff and asking questions. What would happen if you were an intergalactic bounty hunter with a laser and you had to chase people down? Like, what would that be like? These are just smaller versions of those questions. It's analyzing the fiction that we're building together. So for me, like being like prepared for that is really just going in with an open mind, trying to stay in character, and knowing what I want to sort of provoke from the character and from the player as a result. And I think that every single time one of those moments comes up, those big philosophical swan song moments, whatever characters are involved, it always surprises me. There's always something in that where I'm just like, wow. Like there's a quote about the morality of having to kill a person in the line of duty from Mr. Sicarian that like someone made into like an inspirational poster. And I was like, yeah, this is a thing that like an actual like historical figure could have said. This makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
And you know, we explore interesting things in the fiction. Yeah. And it's not about preparing necessarily in advance. It's just about being a person who has like read books and thought about things.
One which of my I think favorite we conversation all... I was a part of was the discussion mortality with Pi between Sicarian and Pi.
Yeah. That was fun. All right, well let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll do probably, I don't know. We'll do a bunch of questions that are in these docs, this Google Doc, and then we'll probably catch up everyone right to the point of where we'll start the next episode. Since this is kind of a recap episode, so we'll take this quick break. We'll come back and go into the third part here of the Swan Song recap episode. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this quick break.